and welcome to The Offside Rule. It's me, Kate Borsay, back from a brief sojourn in France. Bonjour. And joining me this week, I've got not one, but two multi-talented reporter commentator extraordinaires. They've been gassing away about the little foibles behind commentary and what they do for a living. First of all, a big hello to Vicky Sparks, making her debut. Thanks for joining us.
Bonjour, bonjour, ça va?
Oh, my goodness, she's
that's it. That's gone.
Oh, okay, fine. I thought I had some serious competition there, Vicky. And it's a hat-trick of appearances this season for Robin Cowan. Welcome back.
I'm afraid Vicky's stolen both my French words. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you were both at the Women's World Cup in France, and of course, we regularly hear you on Five Live on the BBC. You work for the Premier League as well, Vicky, and various other people. So it's great to have you and your expertise here. I've not been joined by two female commentators. You are a brilliant and beautiful breed. Robin, last time we spoke, you were about to head off to Rome on your honeymoon.
Yes, and it was very nice indeed. We took in a game as well.
Did you now?
So we went to see Roma. We saw Chris Smalling's debut.
Oh, lucky
they
you.
They lost. My husband Ian is a big Roma fan, and that was the day that Oxford United beat West Ham 4-0. So he missed that. So I had to sort of talk him down after that evening. So a Roma defeat, and he missed out on a big Oxford United win. So, yeah, it was a... He wasn't best pleased.
Did you go to Rome specifically because he's a Roma fan?
Yeah. And also we love Rome as well. It was beautiful. We've been there before. He did classics at university.
So this is why he's a Rome fan?
Because
it's a bit of an odd one.
Slightly odd, no. He went there on a school trip and went to Roma on the school trip.
Yeah.
That was about, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it stuck with him. So he always follows Roma, sees how they're doing. And it was great. Great atmosphere. Very different to watching a UK game. I love the gesticulation when the referee made a decision that they didn't like was beautiful. It was proper stereotypical Italian. It was like, mamma mia.
Oh,
it was fantastic.
That. I love that. I'll tell you what, if only we went to Boulogne's football team or Calais' football team, perhaps we'd all be fans of different teams after school trips. Well, I know you've both been busy and we're going to tap into your nous and your expertise as your show goes on. Quick reminder that we're on Jet Radio Friday from 7 o'clock. On this week's show, we're going to extend a helping hand to a friend in need. That's right, the big bosses of VAR. We're going to solve it for you. Okay, good. As well as that, we are officially launching a missing persons investigation to track down a certain lesser spotted Arsenal midfielder who's missed 101 games in North London. Is Gunners boss Unai Emery the Cruella to Ozil's Dalmatian? But first, let's start with VAR. We wish we could offer you a little bit of light relief from those three letters, but it's left us with no option. Oops, VAR is at it again.
He is going to VAR.
VAR are having a look at this.
And the goal has been disallowed.
Well, hang on a minute. VAR are checking this.
No need for VAR this side.
VAR are obviously checking it. And are happy.
Still waiting for confirmation on that.
And if the goal was given, is that a clear and obvious error to overturn it?
VAR says no goal.
The goal stands. No, it doesn't. Free kick. It is a goal.
It's very unlikely that VAR are going to overrule the referee on that one.
You do wonder what VAR is for, apart from offside decisions.
Well, as you can see, there were plenty of incidents at the weekend to choose from. But what was your standout moment of VAR this weekend? A favourite, if that's the right word for it, or might I be so bold, an example of VARs? Robin, you were at Spurs on Saturday to see plenty of drama.
I was at peak VARs on Saturday. Honestly, the Spurs game against Watford. Watford, by the way, should have won that. Definitely should have won that. Mainly because they should have had a penalty. The referee, John Moss, waved away claims for a penalty. You know when you look at it and you think in your gut firsthand, there's not something right about that. There's something I think that could have been a penalty. Then we see on the replay, Jan Vertonghen tripped him 2-3 times. He had a go at him. And you just think, well, it's got to be overturned. But it wasn't. Not surprised because we haven't actually seen one overturned yet, have we?
No.
So that was ridiculous. And then Dele Alli scored the equaliser, possible handball, sort of shoulder bicep. But apart from that, someone hit the wrong button on the VAR screen. So the referee pointed to the centre circle to say goal given. It said Spurs won, Watford won. And then the VAR screen said decision, no goal.
So we were like, just,
what on earth is going on?
And that's
on?
A commentator's nightmare, because presumably you are live into final score, are you, at this point?
Yes, so they kept coming back to me. They said, has it been given? Is it not? And I was and like, oh, well, they kicked off, so yeah, it's been given. I thought Steve Wilson, who was on Match of the Day, dealt with it brilliantly,
yeah,
didn't
I agree.
He? Because he said, oh, it's a goal. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, yes, it is. The screen's wrong. You couldn't make it up.
No, exactly. And that's the story, isn't it? I mean, the story is the confusion as much as the actual decision that's been made. And so it's become a bit farcical, hasn't it, really? Because we seem to be talking about referees' decisions and VAR's decisions more than ever before. And surely the whole point of VAR was that we stop speculating and giving referees a hard time. Vicky, you need to give us another. I gather there was one in the game that you were covering as
yes,
well.
Yes, I was at Burnley against Leicester and the disallowed goal. Now, this was for Chris Wood, a slight touch on Johnny Evans. Wood initially had drawn the save from Kasper Schmeichel. It broke to Wood again. He and Johnny Evans were going for the ball. It ended up bouncing off Evans and going into the net. Evans was trying to get to the line to stop the ball going in. Now, whether he would have got there or not is debatable, but as Chris Wood essentially was running off to celebrate, watching as the ball was trickling towards the goal line, he did, it looked like from the replay, although we had to watch a lot of them to try and see who had made the contact and where it had come, he did make a little bit of contact with Johnny Evans, who then went down. But the question then is that a clear and obvious error?
Yes.
If the goal's been given, then to overturn it. And as Robin said earlier, if that contact is enough to disallow the goal, then you look at the foul on Divock Origi, or certainly the contact on Divock Origi before Manchester United scored. And of course, that foul by Vertonghen on De La Feu in the Spurs-Watford game. Yep. So I think the inconsistency is something that frustrates fans. And also as a commentator, I mean, that is a commentator's nightmare, because you're not sure why VAR are looking at it. You know they're looking at it. You know that they're looking at it from a long period of time. So the match director as well, who's choosing the pictures for the game, has to try and work it out as well. So you can hear what they're saying in your ears, and you're all trying to work it out together. So they show you replays of the ball played over, and you're thinking, right, well, that's not offside, and obviously you're having to commentate on it as well. And then it comes to the moment and you're thinking, well, is there contact there? Does he push him? Is there a handball? Who's it gone in off? Does he clip his foot? And you're looking for about five or six things at once. And it was only after, I think, probably the third or fourth replay that we all kind of worked out exactly, right, OK, there, that's where Evans is claiming that the contact is. So it is incredibly complicated, and therefore incredibly complicated for the VAR as well, you have to say. And I think sometimes there is a bit of pressure to make the decision really quickly. The Premier League are very keen, obviously, to keep the product as it is and keep the pace of it going.
Yeah.
But if we're struggling to see, okay, exactly what's gone on,
what's
here,
going on,
how hard must it be for the officials?
And actually, surely, if the purpose of VAR is to sort out decisions or instances that the referee has missed but appear to be clear and obvious to those people sat in Stockley Park watching all the action, then, you know, 15, 30 more seconds surely then stops us debating so much.
Well, and that's an interesting point you raise, Vicky. They're obsessed with time. They have these screens by the side of the pitch, and they've said we don't want to use them. So why are they there? In the Spurs game, fair enough, he may have not seen the angle right, but we saw it immediately on the next replay. Vertonghen had clearly tripped him. I think if he'd just gone over to the screen
And had a look, and actually
he would have changed his mind.
Sean Dyche said the same thing after the Burnley game. I'm sure it was thought by Klopp as well. The instance I was going to give was the Origi, and all of our games link up because of that, because, you know, surely Rashford's goal should have been ruled out for the challenge or the foul on Origi, and I saw clear contact there around his knee area. So it's like, well, it's the inconsistency behind the decisions. The order from Mike Riley, okay, who's the big boss at the Professional Game Match Officials Limited's big base of referees, and the instruction from him is to use monitors sparingly after claiming that it'll take about 90 seconds for each review. But there's a difference between sparingly and not having used them at all, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've seen them in use at all this season, have we?
No, we haven't. And I think it's interesting. I think one of the reservations that they have about using the pitch side monitor is that by the time the VAR says you might want to go and have a look at this, the referee is already predisposed to think that they've made a mistake. Because if the VAR doesn't think they've made a mistake, they won't tell them to have a look at it. And we did see this a lot, didn't we, Robin, at the Women's World Cup?
Yeah.
That when the referees came over, and they did a lot for subjective decisions, the vast majority of times they changed their decision. And I think there's a feeling that the pressure that a referee is under, you're standing pitch side, you've got however many tens of thousands of fans shouting at you, honestly, in that situation, I think my mind would go blank. I think I would, I mean, I'm not a referee, but I think I would watch the clip again and again. You're mounting pressure. You've got to do it quickly. You've got to do this. And I think there's a sense that if you are removed from the situation, you're in the VAR room at Stockley Park, you can look at it perhaps more objectively. Now, I think there's one issue with that is then the consistency. Referees will look at a decision differently, perhaps. And is there an argument to say subjective decisions? You want the same referee to look at all of them, i.e. you want the match official on the pitch to look at it in case he would make a different decision to the one in the VAR room. I do get the logic behind it. For me, I think the biggest problem is that the clear and obvious error bar is too high. And I think, again, it was perhaps a response to the Women's World Cup where I think it was too low.
Yeah.
Referees were coming over and thinking, on balance, is that a penalty?
Yeah.
That's irrelevant. It's not on balance. Is it a clear and obvious error? So I think it was too low at the Women's World Cup. I think they've gone the other way in the Premier League. And actually, I wonder, even if the referee had come over and looked at it, because that bar is so high, would they still go, well, if there's an iota of argument the other way, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, for example, on Divock Origi, saying, wow, that's never a foul. Yeah. And Jurgen Klopp,
so
obviously,
it basically
saying,
turns
yes,
into
is.
A courtroom, doesn't it? Innocent until proven guilty. So it's not, well, I'm, you know, 70% sure it's a foul or it's an offside or whatever it is. It's
so
you
it's
have
got
to be 100%
of probabilities.
Yeah. And so there's a whole thing behind this that actually they don't want subjective decisions to be looked at by VAR, just the clear and obvious ones. Yet it seems that subjective decisions are being looked at by VAR. So already we're sort of starting to run away from the original intention of it. For our listeners, let's just recap where VAR comes into play. Let's just refresh ourselves and then come up with some ideas for the PGMOL, who are the body of people, referees led by Mike Riley, who's the managing director. We'll give them some suggestions. So let's just recap. So offsides that lead to goals. This is a very rudimentary summary, by the way. Penalties as well, and penalty taking, straight red cards, mistaken identity. And what we don't see, which we did see during the Women's World Cup, was that goalkeeper moving off the line situation, and then also obstruction leading to a goal as well. So we haven't had that so much in the mix. But where are you at, both of you, with your suggestions? Be they mad or be they sane?
Well, I was just saying, I'm getting well into Strictly this year for the first time.
God, where's this going?
Showing my age. I'm well into it in the winter months now. I'm thinking paddles. Penalty, not penalty.
Yes.
And I don't want experts. I want the actual Strictly judges currently as they are.
So do you like a panel of judges?
Craig Revel-Horwood. No, not any judges. Those judges. Yeah. I just think, have someone who doesn't know much about football. And when they say seven, have dive, penalty, or whatever the incident is, I'm on board with that.
Okay, so that's your suggestion, or Robin, or one of them. Vicky Sparks?
Yeah, I reckon Robin's onto something here. I might go down the TV route as well. Maybe a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style. So for some, for penalties, you could do Ask the Audience, and everyone's got a little buzzer, and,
yes,
and votes,
I
and maybe
like
away
that
fans
one too.
Are weighted to try and...
Yes.
Avoid the discrepancy between the number of fans in the ground. You could have the host get Jeremy Clarkson involved. Just ask Jeremy Clarkson what he thinks as one of the answers.
He's surely got an opinion on everything.
50-50, flip a coin. Is it penalty? Is it
yes.
not? Oh, just flip a coin.
How about the situation where a bit like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, teams have a series of options, a bit like tennis, I suppose, more so, and also cricket, that they have a certain number of challenges, a certain number of contested decisions that can be looked at. And if it's honoured, then they get that reinstated. And if it's not honoured, then they are, a little chit is taken off the list.
I don't like this number of challenges thing that some people, because I just feel like if, say, you do, you make a mistake and you waste one, and then there's a clear one that the referee gets wrong, I just think that to be so annoying, just so irritating. I'm just not a fan of that, but I can see why, because it's getting to that point, isn't it?
Well, are we better with or without it? I mean, do we just write this manifesto for them, telling them to dump it all together?
I don't think you can, no. I think you know, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I think initially, I think I'm normally quite resistant to technology, just in general. My phone's full of apps. I can't get any more on it. It's got very small memory. So I think that's just a wider point other than football. But when goal line technology came in, eventually I got on board with that, because it's a yes or a no.
Yes,
in terms of the technology we've got. And it is, like you say, it's very definite. The technology is pretty much there or thereabouts in terms of exact accuracy, and it's in or out. And I think my concern with VAR was always the fact that with subjective decisions, then you are essentially just looking at somebody else's opinion. And yes, for some of them, it is going to give you a better view and a better angle. But as we see, as Sean Dyche said to me after the Burnley-Leicester game, on whether it was even a foul by Wood or not, regardless of whether it was a clear and obvious error. And he said, I feel sorry for the referee because I don't think anybody knows what contact means anymore in the game.
No.
We don't know when is contact a foul and when is it not. So yes. I think what VAR's done is it's focused on the laws of the game, which actually are sometimes quite waffly.
Do the people sitting in the VAR hub, which is a stupid name, by the way, at Stockley Park, do they need more power?
I think they've got a lot of power. I think that's why we're seeing the referees.
But they don't have the power to overturn the referee.
They don't, but they have the power to very strongly advise. And I think that is why we're not seeing referees use the pitch side monitor, because I think the approach that they're taking is the VAR official is essentially as much a part of the team as the linesman. And for example, if the linesman saw an incident very clearly and you didn't as the referee, you would come over and you would essentially take the linesman or woman's advice. So you're still making the ultimate decision as the match referee, but I think they are taking a lot of guidance from the VAR.
But that's also been mentioned as a bit of a negative, because in the game you mentioned, Kate, Liverpool, Manchester United, they gave it to Martin Atkinson, who is obviously one of the most experienced referees in the Premier League. The VAR on that day was David Coote, who's not. And I think people were saying that maybe he really didn't want to undermine Martin Atkinson because of his seniority.
Wow. And so we've got power play thrown into this as well. It's just so blooming confusing, isn't it? And also, I think, you know, having listened to Mark Halsey, who was on TalkSport this week, he said, look, the referees want to look at the pitch side screens, but from above, we've already heard that that's not being recommended. All right, well, I'm not sure this has worked or even helped much, but that's our
really
take.
Not the Strictly judges, no?
Well, just before we move on, I must tell you about our WSL show that comes out every Monday. This week, it's a literary fest with author of The Roar of the Lionesses, Carrie Dunn, and creator of the Women's Football Yearbook and BBC journalist Chris Slegg, joining Lindsay Hooper in the studio to discuss everything from selling out Wembley to whether there's any point in the Continental Cup. That's a bit harsh. It was a jam-packed show with FA Women's Professional Game Director Kelly Simmons, Scottish football aficionado Chris Marshall, and Tottenham midfielder Rachel Furniss. We've got the big names. We cover the important topics, like who's the Philip Schofield of football? You've got to listen to find out, by the way, and even discuss the tactics on the pitch too. That's the Offside Rule WSL edition, out every week on its own feed. Do subscribe with the best insight into the women's game, even if we do say so ourselves. This is the Offside Rule with me, Kate Borsay, Robin Cowan and Vicky Sparks here in the studio. Some serious investigative business now, ladies. This is an official plea to help us find this man.
Mesut Ozil for Arsenal.
Sully is winning in the centre. He's on a hat-trick. He's got the hat-trick.
Ozil! What a hit from Mesut Ozil. That flew into the back of the net.
And now Ozil, can he score? He can! Well, he's taken what was a pretty dull game and turned it into something memorable and a little bit special, Mesut Ozil.
So please, 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 can one of you tell me what's happened to Mesut Ozil? He started just one Premier League game this season and wasn't even included in the squad for Monday night's defeat at Sheffield United. Here are some stats, by the way. Ozil made his debut for the Gunners in September 2013. No players created more chances than him. No one even comes close. Ozil's on 522 chances. Next on the list is Aaron Ramsey with a measly 272. So in terms of Gunners' stats, he comes right up there. He's the club's top assist maker in three of their last six seasons. So what's happened is missed 101 games for the Gunners over his six-year career and only had one major injury in that time. Can either of you solve the puzzle?
I think it's going to be a bit like that gif from Goodwill Hunting, you know, when they're doing that equation. It's so hard. It's just a number of things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think Mesut Ozil, he's been accused of his sort of languid style makes him look lazy, but I don't think the stats back that up.
No.
He actually does run around quite a lot. I think he's a brilliant player, but maybe it's just that he doesn't quite fit in, especially under Unai Emery.
Yeah.
He clearly doesn't think he's working hard enough or doesn't quite tactically fit with him. I mean, he's asked about it every press conference, isn't he? You know, Marie must be absolutely sick of it.
It must be annoying. And also for Ozil too, to be able to, well, every player wants to play and justify their position as well. And when you get older, I think even more so, you don't really want to finish your career like this. So of course he's been linked with moves away. Well, his sorry situation's got us thinking about other players who are currently in their club squad, but compared to where they used to be, most definitely right now out of favour. Vicky, what have you got for us?
Well, this isn't quite fair because he is getting a look in and he's a very young player. But I've gone for another Arsenal player, Eddie Nketiah at Leeds. Now, he's often used as a sub, but he's yet to make his full league debut. And I think Marcelo Bielsa's got a big decision to make because Patrick Bamford is starting ahead of Nketiah at the moment. But he's gone 8 games without a goal now. And Nketiah has now scored more than Bamford this season. He got his 5th goal in the match that I was at earlier this week. The late equaliser coming off the bench against Preston. And it was quite interesting because the Leeds contingent took a huge away following to Deepdale, were singing Eddie Nketiah's name after Patrick Bamford had missed the latest in what had been a row of very decent chances. But then they started singing Patrick Bamford's name as well. And you really get the sense from the Leeds fans, they are so desperate to have patience with Patrick Bamford. But for a lot of them, it is just running out. And of course, Arsenal want to see Nketiah starting. They want to see him getting game time. Bielsa's talked about the possibility of playing them together, but feels that they need to work on it more in training. They haven't had much time to do that. So he'd got a huge future ahead of him, Eddie Nketiah. But I think Leeds have a big decision to make as to when he may come into the starting lineup. And does he deserve that now that he has scored more goals than Bamford this season?
It's going to be really interesting to see if he starts at the weekend, isn't it? Because,
after
as you say,
that as well.
After that, rescuing a point against Preston. Just a side note, Marcelo Bielsa. You know, they had that big 100 years celebration. Black tie. He was in a tracksuit. Absolutely.
Does things his own way.
He's glorious, honestly.
What a rogue. Robin Cowan.
I've got a couple of players who, they're not sort of, they haven't been in favour, then out of it. 2 summer signings who I want to see more of.
Basically changing the rules?
Yeah, basically.
Okay,
I'm doing a Lindsay. I'm taking my cue from her. Basically, it's 2 players I want to see more of. So I've got a bit Watford on the brain because I'm doing them at the weekend. So Ismail Assar, he's a record signing and he's only had 1 Premier League star, lots of sub appearances. And now Danny Welbeck looks like he's injured. I'd like to see more of him and see what he can offer. He's only young. He's 21 years old. He got to the Africa Cup of Nations final in the summer. So he's clearly got something about him. So I'd just really like to see more of him. And obviously they're struggling, especially for goals, Watford. So it'll be nice to see him a bit more. And the other one is Victor Camarasa. He plays for Crystal Palace, which I forgot. Because I was just speaking to someone at a football game on Sunday. They went, oh, yeah, I haven't seen, Victor Camarasa's on the bench for Palace. And I went, hey, but when did that happen? He played for Cardiff last season. He was brilliant. I know they went down, but he was probably their best creative spark. He's had 1 sub appearance in the Premier League this season.
Why is that, though?
I think actually Palace are doing quite well.
Yeah,
they're not doing too badly.
Yeah.
And I think Roy Hodgson, a bit like Bielsa, doesn't really like to change things too much, does he? But it's interesting. I thought, oh, yeah, I remember him reading, oh, that's a good signing for Palace, and he's barely played. So, yeah, I'd just like to see a bit more of him.
We want him back. I went for Olivier Giroud, who, even if he wasn't massively in favour in Chelsea, he would like to think he was in favour. He's the only player so far that Lindsay's taken a picture of, and he's asked if he can check his hair.
Wow.
I love that self-belief. And that slight arrogance. Remember one time he was all out. He had a PR strategy to be bigger than Beckham. That was Olivier Giroud's PR strategy about 4 years
ago.
That's
quite worked, has it?
But I'm not going to knock him too much because he was invaluable last season to Chelsea in the Europa League. In fact, his 11 goals in Europe last season set a new record for the most goals by a French player in a single European season. We know he was best for Chelsea as well. And this season, he's played just 191 minutes under Frank Lampard, scoring once in the UEFA Super Cup against Liverpool. So Tammy Abraham really is the reason why. He's the preferred option. But you can't knock not only his record in Europe, but also his record for France as well. He's a strong part of that French team. He was really good at the 2018 World Cup as well. So what's going on with Olivier Giroud? Will he have to move elsewhere? There are rumours about Palace, but not getting a look in under Frank Lampard. Frank said about it, by the way, he shouldn't be happy and accept not playing. That's what good players do. Interesting. I think he's probably his time. Although, can Chelsea afford to lose him?
Well, Batshuayi scored the winner, didn't he?
Yeah.
Against Ajax yesterday.
Yeah.
So
Giroud was left on the bench.
So, yeah, I mean, even if he's getting ahead of him, probably is time for Giroud to move on, maybe.
I think Chelsea would want to keep hold of him just for the experience and the fact that he gives something different. But I think Pachuay is a good shout as well. I mean, I know he hasn't always pulled up that many trees, but he often just comes up with the goods at late times for Chelsea, particularly
big games.
In cup competitions and Europe. So, yeah, Tammy Abraham, though, I mean, what a season. There's always that question when a player comes up from the Championship and can they do it?
Yeah.
And I've been so, so impressed with him at Chelsea this season.
Yeah, I bet. I worked for Chelsea TV for a period of time, so it was great to see players like Patrick Bamford, who we mentioned earlier, and Tammy Abraham and several others, Mason Mount as well, look at their development through the youth team. And you always wonder, don't you, at Chelsea, whether that's going to translate. And I think because of the situation regarding transfers there, because Frank Lampard's a big believer in youth, partly because he's had to be, but, you know, he is, that's meant some fantastic opportunities for players who I'm really glad that we're seeing. Doesn't help Olivier Giroud, though, does it?
This is The Offside Rule from Muddy Knees Media.
All right, our final topic. We've already touched on Manchester City's comprehensive 5-1 victory over Atalanta on Tuesday night. But here's the real City story this week. And it's not good, I tell you. It's been revealed that before the game, the club had put out an official plea offering to pay influencers to create a great atmosphere at the Etihad. That's the kind of sentence, by the way, I'd have to explain to my mother afterwards. So they basically want big hitters on social media who are called influencers to help create and big up the atmosphere at the Etihad, which is a bit bizarre. The advertisement was listed on Tribe, which is an app that social media influencers can use to get work from brands. I'm sure we'll all be signing up, ladies. It said that the Champions League this year has given us three relatively unknown teams. Meaning our core fans are less likely to attend. Boo-hoo! We identified students, young professionals and those new to Manchester who are our ideal audiences. However, we can't ignore core fans either as they still account for the most ticket sales.
That's good of them.
We want to get across the atmosphere of the Etihad through the use of influencers who can tell an authentic and genuine story of what it's like to be at a game. What a crock of old... Anyway, some great reaction to this. Your thoughts on using influencers and some of the terminology that they only asked for men, by the way. Male influencers was on the ad request.
Yeah, not great. Not great. No. I mean, the whole thing just made me want to chew my own fist off in embarrassment. It's so cringe, isn't it? I suppose this is the modern era, isn't it? But really?
Yeah, and then also dismissing Atalanta, Dinamo Zagreb and Shakhtar.
Unknown
teams. Charming, isn't it? I mean,
so shall I play devil's advocate?
Go on.
Because I think fundamentally, yes, I think. I mean, City have distanced themselves from it. It's understood
they
didn't commission the company who posted it. But regardless, it's not been a successful PR move, however it came about. But I guess the one argument that perhaps you could make is that we know that Champions League group stage attendances, not just at Manchester City, but at other clubs as well, can be a problem as fans wait until the knockout stages. So could this be seen as an attempt to rectify it? Is it ultimately just advertising? And if it was handled perhaps in a better way, would it have been seen as acceptable? Or is it just that if you feel that you have to generate support in this way that's very calculated and methodical, which loads of advertising is, but it undercuts this idea of fans just being naturally passionate about their club?
I still don't think I'm convinced, and it's very nice of you.
I did a good job, though, didn't I?
Yes, exactly.
Good effort.
To tell the other side of it. Well, we've had lots of questions about that, but I'd like to move this on a bit and ask about actually, you know, decent revolutionary or wacko ways in which clubs have tried to enhance fan experience, for better or for worse. Robin, what have you got?
Well, it's simple as. It's not revolutionary. Leicester do it really well. Free stuff.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Everyone loves a freebie, right?
Yeah.
What's been your best ever football freebie, by the way?
I would have to say just the general food at certain clubs.
Yes.
Oh,
Chelsea
my
are great
goodness.
For that, aren't they?
Yes. And I'll tell you what, actually, shout out to Leicester, because they are the only ones that I've been to for a long time that keep it there after the match, because it's a nightmare as a commentator.
God,
you can't get down at halftime.
No.
And you know that there are lovely pies down there and there's biscuits and cakes and all this stuff. And you get down afterwards and it's all cleared away and you think, oh, I'm hungry now.
And by that point, you're starving. You've got to hang around
exactly.
and maybe dial in a couple of reports.
And Leicester just leave it out. Got some nice cheese. cheese. I was genuinely travelling down to the match last weekend and thinking, oh, I can't wait for the cheese afterwards.
It's the best bit.
Any enticing freebies? I'm trying to think about my best football freebie. I think it's always nice when clubs put on performances, even if they're a bit misguided, a bit of half-time entertainment. We were talking about the clackers earlier, weren't we? Annoying or good?
Well, I think, they get a bad rep, don't they? But I think it's all right, especially Leicester. Because, I mean, when they're coming out, you know, it drums up a bit of atmosphere. I know they get a bit of bad rep. Although, actually, I've just had a flashback to when I did Aston Villa against Birmingham. And that was a bad move to give the home fans Birmingham. They gave them clappers and they'd choose them as missiles.
Oh,
maybe
goodness.
Not at a ferocious derby.
Yes.
Maybe not a good idea.
Maybe not a beach ball either. We've learnt our lesson, Liverpool fans, about that one. Here's a couple of ideas. The San Jose Earthquakes, they're a US soccer club, opened their stadium for fans, especially younger fans, to join their mascot to get creative and build replicas of the stadium with Lego, bringing families together at the venue. Here's one that I just can't understand, and it's from Manchester City again. This is hashtag Hackman City. In order to delve deeper into their data and embrace ideas from fans and those with relevant skills in the local community, I think this PR firm might have been hired for this one again, Vicky. The club welcomed experienced developers as well as amateurs along to their stadium to work with their data teams to uncover new insights and ideas. I don't understand any of that. What does it mean?
It's like you said, Vicky, isn't it? It's just the language. Yeah. So sort of scientific, talking about data. It's like, this isn't engaging
it's really odd. Maybe we should take a note from the NFL. Fan first pricing. I like this one, actually. So Atlanta Falcons dropped many food and beverage prices by 50% for fans at the stadium. When reviewing the first year of this initiative, the club found they ranked in the top three clubs for game day experience. And despite those prices dropping, their sales increased. And by encouraging fans into the stadium sooner, the merchandise sales soared 90% higher than the previous year. There is your answer.
That's very good. I also like going back to the San Jose Earthquakes, the sort of open training sessions where you can actually get close to the players. They sign some autographs.
Yeah.
Like we see in the women's game after matches. I just think that anything to sort of feel closer, especially to Premier League players, you feel so isolated, far away from them. They feel like sort of demigods over there.
We need to break down the invisible demigod barrier, don't we? So free donuts. We actually talked off air, didn't we, about how brilliant Leicester are about giving away free stuff. Sheffield United's Chip Butty.
The Chip Butty song, yeah. This only just came to my attention. It's just a fan song which they sing before every single game, before kickoff. It's great. It's a bit like You'll Never Walk Alone song. Maybe not quite as emotional.
Yes.
Well, arguably.
And then a bit like the Napoli fans who sing the Champions League anthem, don't they? And they sing it full blast at the end, which, you know, actually brings goosebumps. My suggestion would be a good old sing-along with words, please, for those fans who, you know, might be new or kind of might not quite get what people are saying, and, you know, perhaps a Manchester accent or a Liverpool accent. This is such a middle-class thing for me to say. Like, as I'm saying it, I feel like it's an awful idea. But I love a good old sing-song. It is mood-enhancing. It's a great lifter, and actually it breaks down barriers of aggression, any kind of seething little rivalry issues that might be bubbling under the surface.
Depends what you're singing.
Actually, that's very true.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think sing songs are great. I think song sheets, there was that rumour, wasn't there, that Manchester United were considering it a couple of seasons ago. I think someone brought it up at a fans forum and it was very quickly squashed and said, no, we're not doing song sheets. It's got to be fan-led, hasn't it? I think you want that atmosphere, you want that passion. I remember when I started going to football matches with my dad as a little girl, it was the singing, genuinely. Yeah. It was the atmosphere at games that made me fall in love with that whole match day experience. But I think the more organic that can be, the better. So it's hard to know how to encourage it, isn't it? Without making it feel prescribed.
Like Man City are trying to do. I'd also say
social media.
A word of warning on people who run the club social media teams who try and taunt their opposition before kickoff. It happens so often. It happened to Stevenage this week. They posted a GIF or a little clip of David Brent because they were playing Swindon. It was David Brent saying, oh, you Swindon lot are little worms.
Yeah, the Office based in Swindon, of course. The epic TV show.
And then they ended up losing last minute winner, Stevenage.
Sad face. All right, so it's time for any other business. We'll wrap up with a few light footballing stories now. The stuff of dreams. That's what we've got first. A goalkeeper scoring with the last kick of the game to grab the equaliser. That's what Billericay Town goalkeeper Alan Julian did, headed home the injury time equaliser against Sutton United to ensure that Billericay's name is in the hat for the FA Cup first round. So well done to him, who was piled on in a big way by the rest of the team at the end of the game, and the bench and the staff and everyone else. So awesome. Another bit of FA Cup magic for you. Non-league Chichester City, the lowest ranked club in the FA Cup, received a bye into the second round following Bury's removal from the competition.
I thought what was so nice on that one was that they said subsequently they're going to donate some of the money.
Yeah, so
that
they got £36,000.
Yeah, so they're going to donate some of that eventually when Bury rises again or whatever happens with it, the new running of the club essentially. They said they'll donate some of the money to that. And I thought that was so spot on.
That is really and actually at a time when clubs are hugely struggling down in the lower leagues.
Well, that money will make a huge difference to them. Yeah, absolutely.
How so nice to give to some have donated. Anything else from you ladies?
Well, first of all, I'd like to pick up on something that was on this week's WSL edition of the Offside Rule podcast about the Women's Champions League.
I agree.
I wanted to watch the Arsenal and Manchester City games. Yeah. First of all, Manchester City was too complicated for my little brain because I think it was an app and then you had to sign up and do this and it was just
too much.
And then Arsenal, there was nowhere, not even a dodgy stream I could find. And I just think that's terrible because it's the Champions League. I want to watch it. Mm-hmm.
We have had this discussion. I've had this discussion with various clubs. Chelsea are better. You can watch it, but I think only if you subscribe to Chelsea TV. And obviously, probably the Manchester City situation was a bit like that too. But I think there are increased calls for it. And I think someone just needs to get to the bottom of it, right, and offer it up.
Definitely.
Let's see.
The other thing was, did you hear about these Liverpool fans that went to Ghent instead of Genk yesterday?
Oh, no. Another. I'm sorry for them, but I love it when that happens.
It's brilliant. So they went to Ghent instead of Genk. We've all done it, haven't we? Think the club, Ghent, they're playing in the Europa League tonight, so they've offered them tickets
so
to that game.
Down. Oh, I really hope so. I really hope so. How about this? Okay, so Freddie Ljungberg has received his first booking for Arsenal in just over 4,500 days. How's that happened? Well, the club picked up another booking for diving against Sheffield United on Monday. It's their seventh, actually, since the start of last season. Youngster Bukayo Saka cautioned for cheating in the second half. This meant that Saka's former youth coach, who is Freddie Ljungberg, basically kicked off about it. He was also watching in the dugout for Arsenal and earned himself a card. His last one was in 2007 in a 0-0 draw at Newcastle, his third from last Arsenal appearance before he left to join West Ham. So there we go. A booking after 4,500 days for Freddie Ljungberg and Arsenal. I love that story.
Impressive.
Vicky, anything from you?
Yeah, big congrats to Alex Morgan, won the Women's World Cup with the USA in the summer, is having a baby.
Oh, awesome.
Very exciting. Congratulations to her and her husband. And have to say, really enjoyed this up in Newcastle this week. Sean and Matty Longstaff, the local brothers. Matty making his Premier League debut, scoring the winner against Manchester United, playing alongside big brother Sean. I had the chance to interview them earlier this season. They're absolutely cracking lads. They've been having a bit of a go at commentary, Robin. I think we might have competition.
Tell them to stop.
Sean was filming it and Matty was doing a bit of commentary on the training session, focusing in on Paul Dummett.
Do we have to worry?
I think we might have to keep a little eye over our shoulders. So but very, very funny to see them having a go. They are cracking lads and nice to see them doing so well at Newcastle.
Well, and a final one from me. It's been announced this week that Liverpool will host Everton at Anfield for the first time in the Women's Super League on the 17th of November. That's that women's football weekend, isn't it? Scheduled for the next men's international break. It'll be the first time that Liverpool have played the game at the stadium since an FA Cup semi-final defeat by Arsenal in 2013. I don't think I even remember that game.
Nope.
So there we go. Good times. I think the offside rule may be at an alternative fixture on that day, of which I am pretty gutted about. Well, that's it. The end of our show for another week. Remember to keep up with us across the week via our social accounts. It's at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. And you can hear us on Jack Radio Fridays from 7 o'clock. Don't forget. And if you want to read some of the things our team have been putting together on the men's and women's games, a comprehensive look at all sorts of things there. We've also been shining a spotlight on a couple of striking heroes up in Scotland. OffsideRulePodcast.com. And we'd love you to subscribe to the podcast too via all the usual methods. Do you want to hear a couple of our reviews, ladies?
Yes, go please.
Okay, here we go. Sion Renblood says, it's great to hear a podcast without experts on it. It's pure entertainment, fabulous, but I'm taking it as a compliment, like we don't,
say.
You know, don't
we
carry
don't sound
on.
Like we know what we're talking about.
Well, I think more we don't waffle on like, you know, a load of old men, perhaps. Elgeezy said, been listening on and off for a while. I have to say, never have I listened to a podcast and got completely immersed in it with jokes, stories and anecdotes, usually Kate or Hoops. The ladies tell, because no matter who's on the pod, they always have so much fun. And more importantly, are serious on the subjects that need talking about. Oh yes, we can be, kind of. Thank you very much for those reviews. We'd love yours and we might read it out if you leave us one. How did you find your first appearance, Vicky?
Loved it. Great.
We've been just
absolute
awesome.
Pro.
Yeah, she
what
is.
A debut.
Hashtag absolute pro for Vicky. Robin, hashtag absolute joy for you. We love you on this show, so I'm sure you'll both be back at some point. Thank you for joining us. And also to you listeners as well. We'll have more for you next week. But for now, we bid you farewell.
The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.